My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Ryan Blaney picks up his second NASCAR Cup Series victory of the year. Dan and I discuss the incident between Kyle Busch and Corey LaJoie on Sunday at Pocono Raceway, a Haley Deegan update, and an in-depth Brickyard 400 preview at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. All of this on 5 to Go.
They arrested me and they put me in jail and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving.
Hot Rod Lincoln. NASCAR was racing through the Pocono Mountains up in Pennsylvania this weekend, and it seemed like the vortex theory was in place and was working for every race except that seemingly for the Truck Series race on Friday night, which was kind of hampered a little bit by rain, but able to get the full distanced race in. But we want to welcome you guys to another episode of the 5 to Go podcast. I'm your host this week, Devin Kupka. I'm in for Doug Turnbull, who is on a church retreat, and he will be back in the hosting chair soon, but I'm just stepping in his place for right now for this week, covering for him on the 5 to Go podcast. But as always, we're joined every week by none other than Dan Elliott. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and yes, we are made in Dawsonville, Georgia again, and that's a great thing. And lifetime here in the big city, and you know, the old town seems to be staying not a lot the same, but pretty much the same, and the growth around 400 down there where we have the first Culver's in the state of Georgia.
Yes, so actually, Dawsonville, Georgia was the site of the very first Culver's in Georgia back in 2016. Now, the reason why we're bringing this up, now that's some new information Dan did learn this morning, but this week is a historic week for Culver's restaurants, as they're going to be celebrating their 40th anniversary on Thursday, July 18th, across all 950 stores across the nation. It all started in Sauk City, Wisconsin in 1984. Craig Culver and his family operated the company for many years, but, you know, Dan, it was interesting because I've been working for Culver's for 5 years. I did the calculation. I'm like, what is 5 out of 40? What's a percentage of that? I've been around the company's lifespan for 10 to 12% of the company's lifespan. Yep. That's how long I've been there.
Yep.
But excited that we're going to be celebrating 40 years. I'm actually, you know, it's funny. I'm repping the shirt that they gave out to the team members, the 40th birthday celebration shirt that they have for us, and they don't normally give out t-shirts, special event t-shirts like the other restaurants do, so it's always special when we get, you know, t-shirts to wear during the workday at Culver's. But that's coming up later this week, but just wanted to start off with that. And you know, we always, you know, every time
you're making me hungry.
You know, maybe we'll have to grab some Culver's after this, but yeah, come go to your local Culver's on July 18th celebrating 40 years there. But enough about Culver's. We always, Dawsonville, Georgia, anytime we make a podcast here, Dan, we always have to talk about the weather, and I think the weather might be calling for some Culver's.
I think the weather is self-explanatory. It's hot followed by hotter and hottest.
Hot and dry. That's all we could say for about a month, although we've gotten some rain down here, and it just seems like, you know, speaking of rain, NASCAR, rain, it looks like they go together somehow because it's there every weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, you're going to Pocono, that was the one thing that we could pretty much count on every year that we went to Pocono for one of the two races, was that we were going to get weather of some kind or another, because I've been there and they have started or tried to start races where you could not see the back straightaway from the front side. You couldn't see the back straightaway. But that is such a massive racetrack. People don't realize, and maybe some people do. I don't want to cut anybody short here, but that is such a massive racetrack.
I think I've been to six race weekends this year. I'm trying to remember. I think only one or two of them did not have any rain in them. I believe that was Atlanta in February, didn't have any weather with that. And Bristol in March, I don't believe, had any weather associated with that race. But since I've been to Talladega onward, it's every weekend has. Talladega had rain, Wilkesboro had rain, Charlotte had rain, Nashville had rain at some point. So I'm just hoping, you know, Indianapolis this week doesn't have any rain. But
every time I go to Pocono, it's like you get the view of them coming down the front straightaway to turn one, and it's almost like you're expecting to see a 777 come landing on the front straightaway at the same time. But to see the cars come down the front straightaway, double file most of the time, and then fan out to 3, 4, 5 wide, and then funnel back in to make turn one most of the time.
Yeah.
It is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and you mentioned weather at Pocono. The truck race is the only race this weekend that was affected by weather. We thought the Xfinity race might be. Now on Sunday, the unfortunate thing on Sunday was that there was a bunch of storms that rolled through. Pocono announced on Saturday night that it was a sold-out crowd for the NASCAR Cup Series race at Pocono Raceway yesterday. But there was a storm that rolled through Pocono at around 10:30 a.m., and that log jammed traffic because all the state troopers had to go back to their cars, and fans were not happy, and you kind of had a little bit of a traffic disaster. But Pocono Raceway stating that they are going to fix this and make it right with fans. They posted that on X yesterday on their X page. But, you know, let's get talking to racing at Pocono. The NASCAR Cup Series race was yesterday. We are indeed taping this on a Monday for the first time in what seems like forever, Dan. But the Busch Light pole was won by Ty Gibbs, his second career pole. Won the pole for the Coca-Cola 600 back in May. He wins this one at Pocono, sits on the pole, led only two times, led only 21 laps in that race yesterday. But, you know, a couple of late cautions, a couple strategy things. Toyotas looked good for most of the race, but it was the Wabash Ford that came to victory lane in Ryan Blaney leading the most laps yesterday in the Pocono Mountains, leading 44 laps. And if you can include the All-Star race, Dan, Ford, remember, going into Darlington, that was only 2 months ago, Ford had not won a race across all three series yet. And we were talking about that going into the throwback weekend at Darlington Raceway. But since Brad Keselowski's won that race, there's been 10 races that have happened since Darlington, if you include the All-Star race. Ford has won 6 of those cup races.
Yeah, Ford is beginning to, which it's the teams that's beginning to show their strength. The fact that they have fought back and put themselves in position, some through the competition side of it, some others through other factors that weren't necessarily, maybe one more off the track than on the track, pit road, so forth. But it was exciting for the Fords, and you've seen the strength of them. And I look for the races coming up to be a little bit the same thing, because Pocono has been one of the tracks Ford has had success on in the past. Can't judge this Gen 7 car so much anymore, though. And Michigan is another place that I see that from times past. But so much is different anymore. I think the surprise to me, Devin, for me, was Ty Gibbs sitting on the pole. And Ty Gibbs, even though it was 21 laps, there were but a handful of cars that led laps. And he has shown his strength through. I feel like that's a driver that has matured a lot. I haven't been a big fan of Ty Gibbs over the past years, but you can't deny where he's come from and to be where he's sitting today, even though engine trouble relegated him to, what, a 27th finish.
Yeah.
And that was, but he showed strength. And he's showing signs of maturity on the racetrack as well. And that's what I look at.
Yeah, Ty Gibbs on yesterday only ran 132 laps. If you watch the race, you could see the moment when Gibbs' engine, it was coming off a restart, Gibbs' engine expired. They actually had it wasn't coming off a restart. It was just sometime during the race. Slowed on the track and then dumped oil on the track because you could see out of the tailpipes there that there was oil coming spilling on the track and like kind of gushing out. So unfortunate for him that happened. But, you know, as you mentioned, second career pole for Gibson. We talked about it before, Ty Gibbs being probably the driver we see next in victory lane that hasn't won a race yet in their Cup Series career. And it kind of feels like, you know, Ty Gibbs also, this was the track he made his Cup Series debut 2 years ago when Kurt Busch got injured during qualifying, stepped into that 45 car. You know, Gibbs has been in the Cup Series for a solid 2 years because he ran the rest of that season for 2311 Racing. So you got to imagine this guy's, the win has got to be coming because I feel like we're starting to see better performance out of him, especially out of his full-time rookie year last year.
Yeah, he's not the only one that I see that's moving up the ladder and maturing, but definitely one of the strongest at Pocono, and that impressed me. But, you know, Truex had a good run, and obviously other drivers as well, even Keselowski had, and you can go through the rundown here, and we'll talk about some of the other drivers.
And let's do that. So, you know, obviously Ryan Blaney winning the NASCAR Cup Series race at Pocono yesterday. Denny Hamlin finishing second. Alex Bowman, a third-place finish, won the Chicago Street Course race last week. And, hey, look, William Byron, top five finish, finishing fourth. Joey Logano, fifth. Reddick was sixth. Seventh was Keselowski. Eighth, Truex. Ninth, Chase Elliott. And then rounding out the top ten is Bubba Wallace. And, you know, we talked about those Hendrick guys. Now all four of them have wins this season. Byron up there. Another good week for Alex Bowman, finishing third. Consecutive top five finishes for him. And when you look down this rundown order, continuing off, 11th was Buescher, 12th was Christopher Bell, 13th Kyle Larson, 14th Eric Jones, 15th Chase Briscoe. But I want to go a little bit further down the list and go down to where Corey LaJoie finished. He finished 19th, and there was an incident later in the race between Kyle Busch and Corey LaJoie. And we know Kyle Busch has had a rough season so far, hasn't won since Gateway last year, so it's been over a year since Kyle Busch has won a NASCAR Cup Series race. You know, you can look at it one way or another. Kyle Busch didn't put any blame on Corey LaJoie post-race or whenever he got out of his car at the Infield Care Center. LaJoie said that Busch hooked himself, and when you look at the tape, you got the long pond straightaway going into turn one, and it's kind of a short, sharp turn, so everybody's going close to 200 miles per hour going in that sharp turn one at Pocono. And when they go toward, they have to funnel in because they get five wide on these restarts, and LaJoie just got a little under Kyle Busch and collected a couple of other cars as well. What did you think of the wreck on Sunday, Dan?
You know, Pocono is, as I said, it's a different racetrack anyway, and when you rely on the spotters, as you well have to do, because number one is none of the drivers are going to give an inch. We done see that time and time again. So if you're sitting in your car and you can't, your visibility sitting in the car isn't too well. So with all the restraint system, with all the safety protection and so forth, and the fact that Pocono, that I think that's one of the racetracks where the spotters are hampered so bad by your view of once you get past the front straightaway, your view is so, what's the word here? It is so obstructed in places, and the perception of where the cars are because of your angle of view is skewed. And I think that there's things that as a spotter, you may miss. I'm not saying that's what happened, but it leads to one of the things. I think the main thing about it was none of the drivers are going to give an inch. Everybody's fighting for all the territory they can. The year has always has come down to a probably one of the worst year of Busch's career. And knowing, I'll talk about that in a minute, just knowing that you're probably going to have years like that. But I think it was just a result of the racing and the intensity, the level, and it, whether you want to hear it or not, it's just one of those racing incidents that, yes, it could have been helped, but like I say, none of the drivers are going to give an inch.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I was listening to SiriusXM NASCAR Radio during the Chicago race weekend, and Austin Dillon was given an interview on one of the programs on there, and he said that there are changes coming to RCR, and it's just waiting on that next step. And it sounds like from what Austin Dillon was saying that things are going to be different next year, and this is just kind of how do you put it? It's
maybe
like
they
that
forgot. Maybe they forgot to tell Kyle Busch things are going to be different next year because he seems to be. I can empathize with him and where he's at because we as team here went through the same struggles. And maybe it doesn't feel like that to him that anybody else can be as bad as they've been, but yes, they can. And things are going to happen. I don't care who you are, things are going to happen. It's just ups and downs in your career, and this just happens to be one of the worst downs, and you've got to get through it. And I think this is where the test comes in on this truly does define what a team is made of. When you can go through these and come out the other side, and maybe that's what Austin Dillon was talking about being better for next year.
And you know, to make matters worse for Kyle Busch, going into the race on Sunday, when they pushed the cars out the pit road, they noticed, there was an oil leak on the car, one of the oil lines. They didn't snap, but there was a tear in the oil line, so they had to take the car off the grid with about an hour before the race started, and they had to start back in the rear. But I mean, when you look at it, Kyle Busch was originally supposed to start 24th, so not really that big of a difference, you know, starting all the way in the back.
No, because you're already deep into the race anyway. So you've gotten through the initial starting in the rear and the thing at Pocono, like most all the other tracks, the caution flags, the starts, restarts, they all are what breed the caution flags, where the troubles usually come from. So the thing about the first race is settling in and just being patient and working your way up through the field, but this came later.
Yeah, and Kyle Busch was starting to make his way up the field until the wreck happened later in the race for him. Busch only running 120 laps on Sunday in Pocono. But, you know, Dan, let's take a look at the Cup Series standings that we have here in front of us. You look at the cut line, because everybody else above 13th has won at least one race this season. So 13th is Truex. He's up by 125 points. Gibbs is 14th, up 84. Chastain, 53 points above the cut line, 15th. 16th is Buescher. He's 45 points up, and he's the last driver that would be currently in the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs as of right now. First driver under the cut line, Bubba Wallace, 17th. Minus 45. Then it's Briscoe, minus 88. 19th, Kyle Busch, minus 98. Todd Gilliland is 20th, minus 121. And the maximum point gain you can get in a NASCAR race, unless it's the Coca-Cola 600, is 60 points. So, looking at this, you know, when we've gotten together, we talk about Truex is due for a win. He ran well yesterday. He led 20 laps at Pocono. He finished 8th place. Do you see Truex getting a win before the NASCAR Cup Series regular season is over?
All right. I would say that the chances are not impossible, but very slim. Just because of the season that they're having, I think that is playing with their head more than anything. It's kind of like Busch. A lot of this stuff plays with your head. So, looking at the drivers who have not won that are just below the cut line and the five races that we have left, which you said was Indy, Richmond, Michigan, Daytona, and Darlington. Right, plug these drivers that are below the cut line and counting Truex, where will their strengths be in these races? Are they capable of winning one of these races?
Well, you know, we got Indianapolis Motor Speedway this weekend. Chase Briscoe, that's where he's from. Now, I don't think he's raced on the oval, or if he did, it was back in 2020 or 2019 when he was racing for Superhaus Racing in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. And I believe he did win one of the oval races for them when racing in the Xfinity Series back in 2020, I want to say, but I could be wrong about that. I'd have to. Bad host here, not doing the research. But you know, Briscoe, he would always run well at the road course at Indy, so that would be a driver to watch out there.
Maybe a 50-50 chance I would give him of that, but definitely a tough row to hoe if you're a gardener. That's a tough row to hoe. So. I think that for me, the race coming up at Indy, and we discussed this a little bit, I think the favorite to me would be Hendrick or Penske, and I favor Hendrick a little bit more so because the fact that each one of his teams has won a race already. So the pressure for that part is off a little bit for them. The other pressure just comes in wanting to be up the list as far as possible, the number of wins, the points, everything leading into that. But now you plug in Bubba Wallace. Could Bubba Wallace walk away with Daytona?
Yes, yeah, I could foresee that happening. I mean, picked up that win 2 years ago, almost three years ago now at Talladega Super Speedway. You could see that as well. And also another thing with, well, I'll bring it up later when we get to talk more about Indianapolis Motor Speedway Weekend, which is coming up this weekend up there in Indiana. But looking at the rest of these races, what about Chris Buescher? He's a driver above the cut line. Michigan, I mean, he won back-to-back races going into Daytona last year. I mean, he could be a driver that could be
the player. He could be the player for Michigan. All right, so you have Richmond, who if a driver was going to, which Hamlin has already said he's going for it everywhere he goes, and I think he just needs to sit down and be quiet and drive. That's my personal opinion. Nothing against him whatsoever, but just sit down and drive and do what you have done best in previous years.
Temperatures are going to be different at Richmond. It is going to be, I put it in quotations, a night race because it starts at 6 p.m. on the East Coast. So you got to imagine it'll be just about dark by the time they get that race over with. Yes, and that race does start at 6 o'clock. So it's going to be kind of that evening race that they have at Richmond coming up next month. And that's actually right after the two-week break. It's the first race we get back. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, I know you mentioned the tires there, and that's going to be something to watch out for when we get to Richmond Raceway in a few weeks.
Tires everywhere because NASCAR seems to be, or Goodyear seems to be throwing out the proverbial equation that just when we think we know what all the standards are, what we're going to be looking at, then the tire situation has been thrown in several of these. Okay, then you got to go back to the races that are left and say, which one of these races are we going to play with tires again?
It's going to be Richmond.
It's probably going to be Richmond.
It is going to be Richmond because NASCAR said that it's going to be similar to what they did at Wilkesboro, where you're going to have your regular tire and then your option tire.
I also look for Darlington maybe to... I don't have any information on that, but I'm in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that would be the perfect place.
To do the tires, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you got the Sands from Myrtle Beach. They come in.
That's an aggressive asphalt at Darlington.
And if you've ever been down to a beach area, look at the pavement that they have there and how abrasive the sand is. That's why Darlington is so abrasive, because it's in that... it's not tropical climate, but it's near the beach.
It's in that sand belt.
Yeah, exactly. That perfectly said, sand belt. Never thought of it that way before. But those are the five races that we have left in the regular season. It feels like it's going to be a while before that because, you know, Darlington, after Darlington, we go to Atlanta Motor Speedway for a Quaker State 400 available at Walmart weekend.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, so that's within six races. And the only thing I take away from that is that I've got a lot of races coming up. I'm at six out of the next 11 or 12 races. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting stretch for sure. But, you know, those are the races coming up. Do you think going on the playoff standings, there's only four drivers? And I didn't think for a while this season we only had like six or seven different winners for a while until we got to Darlington is when things started to change. And really when Austin Cindric won and then Blaney finally won. Do you think we see more? Because right now we only have 12 different drivers that have a win this season. Do you see that we get more than 12 different drivers winning a race this year, or by the end of the regular season?
I think we do. I really do. I think we do. But here is the wild card. Is still the tire situation to me is one of the wild cards. The other wild card being how many of these drivers are getting more and more anxious as we get into this, because here's the factor to me, and the fact of the pressure is that fewer and fewer teams are waiting longer and longer periods of times to sign a contract to get you back into that car. And I don't know how many of these drivers, but they've got to know that their careers, they're pretty solid on everybody that's left. They are. But let's face it, your bargaining position, your bargaining chip gets better and better when you put yourself in the winner's column and everybody wants to be there. You look at Bubba. Bubba's the one that he's been talked about a lot, and I think a lot of this is playing with his head. You've got other drivers that's the same way. You've got drivers that aren't in the equation. Little E, Harvick, you know, whether Little E drives anymore, Harvick may or may not drive anymore. He may be completely out. But these people are vocal, and they're very vocal, and that's the article. I see what it's done, even and if you want to talk about the Haley Deacon deal anymore, and what the fact that talking about all of this stuff is doing, and you look at all the factors that make this a head game, and buddy, you've got players in this that want to make a lot of this a head game.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Deacon stuff a little bit later on this episode of Five to Go, but you know, you talk about a driver being locked up. I want to talk about Todd Gilliland for a second, because when you think about it, Gilliland last year, right, he got replaced for a couple of races with Zane Smith. And remember, you know, we all thought, okay, Zane Smith's probably going to go to front row for this year, right? We thought Gilliland's out of that ride after last season. We thought he was done, because, I mean, they basically kicked him out of his ride for a couple of – or for multiple races last year. But now it's like, front row made the right decision. Maybe they were trying to showcase Zane Smith, make it look like he was the next great thing. I mean, because look at it. Look at front row. They actually made the smart decision to actually keep
Gilliland.
Maybe
they were putting pressure on Gilliland to step up.
That could be true, too.
Yeah.
Because think about it. You thought Gilliland was on the way out of the door at front row last year, but now he came back. Smith is gone. Gilliland stayed, and Gilliland's actually having a really good season. He's the best performing front row driver.
Of all the four out of the cut line, all four of those to me have about the same odds of being able to win a race and put it together before the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say honestly, for Kyle Busch or Todd Gilliland, more so Kyle Busch, but Kyle, I think he's going to have to win at Daytona. I can't foresee, just because of the performance of RCR this year and the other teams, I think it's just going to be tough to do it at any other track. Maybe he does it at Indianapolis. He's won two races there.
I think for him to win any race this year, there's going to be an intervention, and I think they're going to have to come in, and somebody is really going to have to get into all of their heads this year, and do something out of the box extraordinary for this year.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do the rest of the season, because both RCR drivers sitting outside the playoff bubble right now, and you know, Austin Dillon said that there are changes coming, and it could be the in between year before.
I feel like that if he was given if he was the only car in a race that had tires and everybody else didn't, I'd still be concerned that he wasn't going to win the race, and him the only car with a set of tires on the car. I'd still be concerned, because that's just kind of the year and the way it's shaped up. It's nothing against Kyle. It's just the way the year's shaped up.
Yeah, and an unfortunate finish for Kyle Busch on Sunday in the NASCAR Cup Series race at Pocono. Busch finishing 32nd, and then you look at where Austin Dillon finished. He finished 23rd, so, you know, both sub 20 or 20th or worst finishes for both RCR cars this weekend. But recapping the Cup race, you know, Ryan Blaney winning yesterday, second win of the season, defending NASCAR Cup Series champion. Let's look over quickly over the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race that happened on Friday night at Pocono Raceway. We had Corey Heim win that one. It was Heim time indeed, because he led 55 out of 70 laps. on Friday night. That race affected by rain a little bit. They got it just in time before the 8:20 mark on Friday night. But Corey Heim picking up his 10th career NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series win on Friday night. Yeah, let's go through the top three real quick. Heim was first, Grant Enfinger second, and Christian Eckes finished in the third position. Eckes leading 11 laps on Friday evening. NASCAR Xfinity Series race was on Saturday afternoon at Pocono Raceway. Cole Custer coming out with the win, defending NASCAR Xfinity Series champion, picking up his first win of the season and his 14th victory overall in the NASCAR Xfinity Series on Saturday. Top five, Justin Allgaier, 7th, William Byron, 3rd. 4th was Sheldon Creed, and Taylor Gray rounding out the top five for the NASCAR Xfinity Series race on Saturday. With Cole Custer winning the Xfinity race on Saturday at Pocono Raceway, that's Ford's first win in the Xfinity Series all year, what has been a struggling year for Ford. But things are looking up in the Cup Series, as we mentioned earlier, and maybe things are going to start looking up for the Xfinity Series teams this year. I do want to point out, though, Ryan Sieg, RSS Racing, finished 12th in the SIABS Ford on Saturday. That car fully prepped by Stuart Haas Racing, and you can definitely tell the performance uptick in Ryan Sieg's car on Saturday, and makes you wonder what's going to happen with that team going forward, if there's going to be maybe Haas Factory team starts prepping their cars more, because honestly, it's just such a major jump in performance. Winning
that race for Xfinity in a Ford would be like, they're probably celebrating like they won a championship, because that's probably the way I'd feel. And especially, I would have to, if I was Ford, I'd have to look at this and really scratch my head as to what's going on during the season. That's your if I understand this right, this is the first single victory for Ford this year in Xfinity.
Yep, correct. Well, so it's been a not a good year for them overall when you look at the top three series. But you know, Sieg's team is the based out of Tucker, Georgia, one of the only really NASCAR teams that are based out of the state of North Carolina, that are not in the state of North Carolina. So, you know, give props to them, you know, kind of keeping that old tradition.
Yeah, whatever
alive.
They got going, keep it up, guys, because that's impressive.
Yeah, as long as they keep getting those cars from Stuart Haas Racing, that's when you start seeing the jump in performance from Ryan Sieg's team. But, you know, that was the weekend that was at Pocono. Let's go back kind of to the Xfinity Series a little bit. Haley Deegan, out of her ride, driving the number 15 car in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. You know, they put Joey Logano in it last week at Chicago, Josh Berry in it this week at Pocono, you know, and Haley Deegan was spotted at the IndyCar race weekend at Iowa Speedway. What do you make of that, Dan?
I think if somebody's thinking what I think they're thinking, that they better be careful, because I think this is where, and like I said, I have nothing against Haley Deegan. I think she's a good driver, but I think that you can be put places as a driver that are dangerous to your health. And we don't know this for fact, so this would be pure speculation anyway, but I hope she's not thinking about a Indy ride, or I hope nobody's thinking about that. I've read a lot of the stuff that Dale Jr. and other people have put out there. I don't understand why Dale Jr. don't put her in a car. And that, to me, he has the prime opportunity to be able to do that, and I think he is the prime person that could help her the most.
Well, the one thing with Junior Motorsports, when you look at them in the Xfinity Series, is that a lot of their rides are all locked up. You got it. You got Sam Mayer in there. You got Justin Allgaier and a couple of other drivers as well that are all currently occupying all the rides in the Xfinity Series for Junior
Motorsports.
That's easy.
Just buy another ride. Just buy another ride.
You could do that
and put them in it, because the opportunity is there. So I'm just saying, if there is interest in doing that, then that's what I would do.
Yeah, and you know, because you got Sammy Smith in the Xfinity Series for Junior Motorsports. Justin Allgaier. Then you also have Brandon Jones. And, you know, you can't, you could put a fifth car. We'll see what happens with Haley Deegan, but I thought it was interesting. And she was at the track this weekend at Pocono. Sponsorship obligation with, I think it was Idaho Potatoes. They've done a thing out in the fan zone for a few years now where, you know, you could try out potatoes at the racetrack before you head into the track. But, you know, hey, you know, anytime I would go as a fan, you know, I always try to hit that Idaho Potatoes stage.
All we need is a spud launcher.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but, you know, it's free food. It's free food. So, I mean,
there you go. Know,
I can't complain about
no,
that.
No, cannot complain.
But, you know, news going into this week, move on from the Haley Deegan stuff. Or actually, let's go to the IndyCar at Iowa Speedway. There was a wreck on the backstretch, actually, after the checkered flag.
And if you watch that, that wreck was spectacular. And I'm glad that no one was seriously injured.
Of course, bad host here. Not figure. I watched the end, but I don't remember the guy's name because I don't watch too much of the IndyCar series. But there was a flip on the backstretch, not coming to the checkered.
It looked like
the
opening for Dukes of Hazzard is kind of what it looked like, where one car is jumping the ramp truck. It almost looks that spectacular. But sorry for all the people involved. It's not to make light of. It's just it was spectacular. And if you go back and if you didn't watch it, go back and check the highlights of that.
Luckily, the car did not get into the catch fence there at Iowa Speedway. There are about three or four cars involved in that.
Or inside the cockpit of the other race car. It was close.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, open-wheel driving, just like Formula One, is very dangerous when those cars get airborne because your head is completely exposed. There's no roll cage in there like they do in the stock cars of NASCAR. But luckily, everyone okay at that crash on Iowa Speedway from yesterday in the IndyCar race there. And let's move on to some silly season news. And we got that Noah Gragson's officially joining Front Row Motorsports next year. Not sure what car number he's going to drive. Looks like there's going to be a reshuffling of cars there. But good to see Gragson keeping the same manufacturer and Ford. He's an up-and-coming driver. He's currently racing for Stewart Haas Racing this year in the 10 car. He's going over to Front Row Motorsports. The only driver that doesn't have plans that are set in stone, or at least have been publicly announced, is Ryan Preece, who drives 41 car for Stewart Haas Racing. So Front Row Motorsports has got two of their drivers. They've got Todd Gilliland for next year, and they've got Noah Gragson still waiting for that third car to replace Michael McDowell. But what do you think about Front Row Motorsports signing Noah Gragson to a multi-year deal to start driving for them next year?
You know, I'm going to be really interested to see how well he does with the change of car ownership, so to speak, not manufacturer. But I'm going to be interested to see, and I think it's up to him where he goes from here, because I kind of group him in a category of drivers that are about the same level of experience that you could put in any one of those in a car. But now it's like we talked about Gillen. Now it's up to him to prove himself. And I think that's where we've seen the pressures of some of these other drivers as we've come down to the abbreviated portion of the season. Now we're running out of races. So there's not a lot of time to prove what you can do. And the opportunities have to present themselves. But some of these drivers will take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to go back on the Gilliland point that I made earlier about Todd Gilliland at Front Row. It looked like he was going to be gone after last season, but think about how kind of how valued Zane Smith was for Trackhouse to go out by a charter, basically just for him to field him in a car this year at Spire. Think about how lucky Front Row got. Instead of replacing Gilliland with Zane Smith. Because think about it, Zane Smith, look at how dead last in the point standings this year. 35th in the point standings for Zane Smith. So, you know, it was a good thing that Front Row kept Gilliland. Gilliland stepped up, and you said, I mean, there could be a chance there that they told him to step up. I mean, that must have been a wake-up call for him last year, losing, because you don't see that too often where a full-time Cup Series driver, they come to you mid-season like, yeah, another up-and-coming driver is going to be racing your car six races out of the year.
Yeah, and you put a lot of faith and hope into this driver, and he either delivers or he don't. And the opportunity, like I said, because you look at the drivers that we're talking about and how many of them were involved in accidents yesterday at Pocono, and it's unbelievable how it kind of presents itself in the opportunities of make or break situations. And even down, and we talked about Logano about very little this much, but Logano just had a quiet fifth place run Pocono yesterday. And this is one of the drivers at the first of the season, I wasn't so sure where he was going to be at.
Yeah, and it's just kind of fascinating to see the Front Row Motorsports story unfold over the years. Michael McDowell picking up the Daytona 500 win in 2021, and then he won at the Indy Road Course last year. So, you know, they're just looking for more Cup wins, and I think they're expected to become a Tier 1 Ford team next year. So you got to imagine that team's going to be packing a punch next year, as long as, you know, Ford can get their stuff together maybe a little bit earlier in the season in the Cup Series. But, you know, right now they're rolling 6 out of the last 10 Cup Series events they've won, with Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, Austin Cindric, and Ryan Blaney. And, man, who would have thought all three Penske teams would have a win by the midseason point, because it just didn't seem like that, especially with Austin Cindric and all that. But
yeah, I think Austin Cindric was a surprise to me out of all of those drivers, because he hasn't been the strength so far, and had an 18th place finish yesterday. So it is, and that really was one of the tracks I thought he would do better. I thought he would have a better finish than that. Ty Gibbs is still the surprise for me.
Yeah, I mean, Ty Gibbs, I think it's just a matter of time before he wins. Yep. But going back to the Ford camp, I think, you know, you'd say RFK Racing and Penske are the two top Ford teams. Out of those, Chris Buescher's the only driver that hasn't won a race yet. He's come close a few times this year. Almost won at Kansas. That was with the closest finish in NASCAR Cup Series history. But you got to imagine that that he's got to pick up a race win soon. He's plus 45 over the cut line, so going to be interesting to see what happens these next couple of races for Chris Buescher and RFK Racing.
Yeah, because all you need is two more drivers to be in victory lane that are in this mix of cars, and it'll be really a shakeup, and talk about a pressure cooker, then will be one. Because the drivers that are left and the positions are fighting for, which it always comes down to that. It comes down to the last few races, and it'll probably come down to that last race at Darlington, and there will be a pair of these drivers that will be do or die on that one race.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was thinking going into this episode of the podcast, Dan, I'm like, okay, every time we get together, it seems to always be charter news. But I was thinking at the beginning of the podcast, I'm like, there really isn't anything new. We haven't heard anything. Although I want to bring up a discussion point that was brought up last week that will probably tie more in with charter news. It's about limiting the teams to three cars each. So in the Cup Series, and it would be grandfathered in, but as soon as a contract is up for a driver, they have to go down to three. What do you make of that? Because I think we've talked about it on here before, where it's just a bunch of satellite operations, but NASCAR believes that going down to a three-car operation is cheaper than running a four-car operation, and I want to get your take on that.
You know, based on what I've seen in the past, and I'll base it off of that, is the fact that even though you could have one team, two teams, three teams, whatever, because the fact that someone else in your family or someone else can own that team, it wouldn't even have to be in the family, just somebody else, and you run the operation. It's such a, I'm not going to say it's a joke, but it's so deceiving as to who runs this stuff anyway. And I don't really know. I wish I could better judge what each side. I think I can put it together for the most part on NASCAR doesn't want to give up any of the control of the organization, and I understand that. And the teams, they say they want more of the money, more control of that. But really, to me, it comes down to they want a piece of the pie. And when you divide this up, the more teams you own, the more money you stand to make. And I don't know, I can't figure out for the life of me where it's going to go. Not been privy to any of the discussions or what's been brought up, or I keep reading what some of the drivers have said, what very few of the owners haven't said very little of anything.
Yeah, and there really hasn't been a ton of talk in the past really few weeks about the charters at
all.
Is
it going to get ugly? Will it get, as it continues on, will it get ugly, or do you think that they'll be able to hash this out, or is anybody going to be happy when it's all said and done? Is anybody going to be happy?
Well, I'm going to say this. Indianapolis Motor Speedway weekend, Brickyard 400 weekend, this weekend at Indy. The next time any NASCAR series will go racing isn't until mid-August at Richmond Raceway. So we have 2 weeks off. So I have a feeling that these 2 weeks is when we're going to see heavy charter negotiations.
Well, it's going to have to come down to something, because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty on this. But, you know, it's almost one of those things where hindsight for me is, I wish I'd never heard of the charters. I wish they'd never done them, and we'd just been racing. And we get sidelined. The racing sometimes takes a back seat to all of this other, I'm not going to say BS, because it's very important to a lot of people. But we get caught up in the rhetoric of all this other stuff, and that's what I'm seeing from a couple of the drivers, ex-drivers, that are very vocal. But when it comes down to it, does it really matter?
Yeah, and, you know, to throw a little teaser in here, we are going to do here on the Five to Go podcast, a Future of NASCAR episode, where we're going to talk all things about the charters and
the future of N1.
Yeah, exactly. The future of N1. We're going to do it within the next, I want to say, 2 weeks, because that'll be the perfect time that we're going to be able to do that.
I was trying to think back how long I've been calling this N1, and it's been a long time. And
I mean, it's going that direction. We're going to probably going to add street races. We're going to touch on that too.
And international. You know, you're talking about a lot of things, and you're right.
Yeah. So, future of NASCAR episode coming within the next 2 weeks. We're going to discuss a lot of things about the future of NASCAR, the TV contracts, the charters, all of that. You know, this is the most we've revealed about the future of NASCAR episode, but I'm excited to partake in that episode, because I think it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a really good one. We're going to have that within the next 2 weeks. Could be next week, could be 2 weeks now. Just within the next 2 weeks, we're going to have the future of NASCAR episode. We're going to break down everything going on.
It's kind of like Moody Blues in your wildest dreams.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to break down everything, the future of N1, I mean NASCAR. But let's go on to this weekend. For the first time since 2020, NASCAR is returning to the Oval at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Brickyard 400 weekend presented by PPG. So it's going to be an exciting one. I'm going to be there for the first time covering a race there. I've never been there for a race before. For the first time ever, I'm going to be there for a race this weekend, covering it on behalf of the Five to Go podcast. So you guys are going to stay up to date on the Five to Go Facebook
page.
Kiss
the bricks for me.
I took a tour. So 2 years ago, I went up to Wisconsin for an NFL game for Jets Packers. And my dad and I, we stopped at IMS on the way up or to take a tour of that track. And that is, from what I have seen in the museum, the gift shop, that is a high-class facility. Top-notch facility. I have pictures on my phone from taking that tour, which wasn't that long ago.
Did you kiss the bricks?
No, we were given the opportunity to do it. And I did
I figured you'd jump down and give that brick mouth to mouth.
I don't know if I did or not. I did not kiss the bricks. I don't think I did. We touched the bricks.
We went tested when Cup was their inaugural deal up there, and I kissed the bricks while I was there.
Oh, that's cool. But you know, before
I swear somebody knocked me down though.
Let's preview the weekend that we'll be at up in Indianapolis. It's actually kind of a dual weekend, because it's a quadruple header weekend, but it's split up between two tracks. You got the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and then you got the Lucas Oil Raceway Park up there, just a little west of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So on Friday, you got the ARCA Menards Series racing at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Circle City 200, and then later that night, It's going to be the T-Sport 200 for the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at approximately 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's an awesome doubleheader of action at Indianapolis Raceway Park on Friday night. I will be there. I'll be there in some sort of fashion because I do have to hop from the track at Indianapolis Motor Speedway on Friday because we got NASCAR Xfinity Series and NASCAR Cup Series. Hour-long practice on Friday at the track. Then Saturday, it's going to be the Pennzoil 250 at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time for the NASCAR Xfinity Series. That will be on the oval at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And then Sunday, it's the penultimate, the Brickyard 400 presented by PPG at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That race will be on NBC. The Xfinity race, Pennzoil 250 on Saturday, will be on USA Network. And the T-Sport 200 and the Circle City 200 will be on FS1. So it's going to be an exciting weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'll have that all covered for you guys on the 5 to Go Facebook page. But talk about your trip to Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I know you said you kissed the bricks, but what were your first impressions going there? What was it, 94.
I think my impression of that place was that how huge that place was, and four corners, and the fact that they had grandstands on the inside and outside of the racetrack, and you couldn't see very well at all. And I'm thinking you're paying all this money and you can't see the race.
That's the tough thing I would imagine for a race fan, unless you're in the pagoda. But if there you're in the pagoda, though, you have to turn your body to see the other side of the track.
Or in the suites and the grandstands.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, that track is so old that if it was a modernly built track, you'd probably be able to see the whole facility, even with grandstands on each end.
But the prestige of that track.
It's so prestigious. My time, I mean, I said it was just a awesome facility. I'm really looking forward. This is a bucket list race that I've always wanted to go to.
I joked when I came home and I said even the gate guards were in tuxedos.
It's a super nice facility. The tour bus was nice when we took it out on the front stretch. And I got to say, when I was there 2 years ago, well, not even 2 years ago, how narrow that pit road is. That is it might be the narrowest pit road on the circuit. But it's going to be a fun time up there in Indianapolis. I'm going to be there all weekend covering for right here on the 5 to Go podcast Facebook page. Stay tuned to that. But looking forward to Indianapolis Motor Speedway quadruple header up there in Indy. So going to be a lot of fun indeed. I'd say a driver to look out for. You know, remember, Penske owns Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and they also owns IndyCar as well. But you know, maybe an Austin Cindric or a
Logano.
Ryan Blaney or Logano. But what about Chase Briscoe, Indianapolis native right there, returning to the oval? So it's going to be fun.
I give him better than 50-50 odds on bringing that one home. But that racetrack being so prestigious, I look at two teams that are very, I'm going to say, even past adamant that they're going to win this thing and bring home the trophy. And that would be Hendrick, number one, Penske, number two. Hendrick for the fact that four drivers and the fact that they raced there with Kyle Larson at Indy and chose to stay there as opposed to coming back home and being there for the start of the World 600. For the Coke 600.
So, you mentioned Kyle Larson there. Think about it. That's a whole race at Indy, and they have a race there. Now, a lot of the Cup drivers, most of them have raced on the oval at Indy, so this isn't going to be anything new for them. But it's been a while, and there's been some drivers that probably haven't raced in the oval in the Cup Series. But what do you think? I'll touch this first. How do you think the race is going to look? The next gen car looking good at mile and a half. So I'd say the Indianapolis, the last like 4 years that they raced on the oval at Indy, they were pretty decent races. The 2020 race, Kevin Harvick winning at IMS in the Brickyard 400. And that was a good race. I mean, how do you think the racing is going to look on the Cup side of things at Indy, on the oval?
You know, I'm concerned about the tires a little bit. I'm concerned about the speeds. The fact that you run so fast there, and that is such a treacherous racetrack, whether you believe it or not. It is not for the faint of heart by no means. And I think that the thing that everybody is going to have to look at from the driver's standpoint is your positioning. I think you're going to have to be more focused on who's around you and where you are at in comparison, in conjunction with them on the racetrack. Because I noticed one of the cars that had passed, and I can't remember who it was, my take on Pocono yesterday, one of the cars that caught up to Denny Hamlin and passed him, they didn't wait for Denny to do that close side drafting thing. They peeled off and went way wide, giving themselves a lot of clean air. And I think that's what you're going to have at Indianapolis, is the car is going to have an extremely large amount of clean air so that you can run the limits of that track and not find yourself stuck in the wall.
And do you think Kyle Larson has that advantage a little bit running the Indy 500 this year? Because now he's got all those laps on there. And I got to imagine the track has aged a little bit in the time
that they
ran the oval.
I think the difference in the cars, it did not hurt any at all. It did not hurt any at all going and run Indy for Kyle Larson. That did not hurt him any whatsoever. There were probably things he picked up from other drivers that will relate in the car, in the Gen 7 car. Not the same thing, but it's just like Chevrolet and NASCAR and all of them going to the 24 Hours Le Mans. This stuff does not hurt. And anytime you can go and you know in the IndyCar, I think you pick up the finer points. I think it hones you better for these cars than if you did it the other way around.
Mm. Yeah, and
that's what concerns me about Haley Deegan. Mm.
Mm. Yeah, and go. It's going to be interesting. Maybe Deegan's going to be back at the track.
If indeed she does look at an Indy ride or has an opportunity for an Indy ride.
We'll definitely see what happens there at Indy NXT. Their races are all going to be broadcast on FS Box or FS1 next year. That's the developmental series for the IndyCar series. But it's going to be a fun weekend. Let's go again through the schedule on Friday at IRP, not Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but just a little west of the track. Arca Menard Series Circle City 200, 5:30 on FS1. T-Sport 200, NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series 8:30 on FS1, all times Eastern. Saturday, Pennzoil 250 for the Xfinity Series at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You catch that one on USA Network and Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio. And then on Sunday, you got the Brickyard 400 presented by PPG, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time on NBC and on IMS Radio. So that's going to put a wrap on another episode of the Five to Go podcast, and it is time for our final thoughts. And now, Dan, it is time for your final thought.
You know, I was kind of looking, since we're coming to Indy, I just hope it's a good, safe, clean race, and that some of these drivers that need to bring themselves up the list here and can have some good finishes. And I really would love to see a driver that has not won a cup race this year. I would love to see a driver emerge that has not won.
Not won a cup race at Indy, or not won a cup race at all?
At all this year.
At all this year? Todd Gilliland, that'd be nice to see. I don't know. I have a sneaky feeling that Reddick's going to win on Sunday. I don't know. That's my race pick, but I don't know.
I have a funny feeling that Ty Gibbs is going to be another car that, I'm not going to say he wins. That's not what I'm saying. I think he's going to have another good run and is going to be among the front runners in Indy.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see what happens at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You know, my final thought, I'm just really looking forward to going up to Indianapolis. I was up in Indiana, in Evansville, Indiana, covering the... why am I losing my train of thought, Devin?
The train left the station.
The train did leave the station. North Georgia men's basketball made the Elite Eight up in Evansville at the Ford Center. You know, NASCAR always follows me around, so there was a Greg Biffle car at the Ford Center up in Evansville, which is about 2 hours from Indianapolis, southwest of Indianapolis.
And Greg has quite a winning history with Ford.
Yeah, and I think it was fitting that they put his cup car up there at the Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana, when our UNG men's basketball team was up there. But Indiana was a great state. I had a blast when I was up there. So I'm really looking forward to being in Indianapolis and Indiana this weekend. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. Brickyard 400 presented by PPG Weekend. All that's gonna be on the Five to Go Facebook page. I will have you guys covered with interviews, stats, and you know it. It's going to be on there. So you're going to want to stay tuned to the Five to Go Facebook page. But this will put another episode made in Dawsonville, Georgia, in the garage. And check out your local Culver's on Thursday, July 18th for the 40th anniversary birthday celebration. But for Devin Kupka, Dan Elliott, we want to thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Five to Go podcast. And Dan, I think it's time to go get some Culver's.
Stick a fork in it. It's done.